The views and opinions expressed by the guests of the Inspira podcast do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of any agency of the United States government or any organization, public or private.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Inspira podcast, hosted by your girl, me, Erica Mueller Chen. I'm an international development specialist with over a decade of experience leveraging the amazing power of sport to promote peace and positive social impact. My career has allowed me to live in Europe, Southern Africa, and Latin America. In 2022, I accepted an offer for my dream job in sports diplomacy. And I also became an employee family member to a U.S. diplomat, aka an EFM. This podcast is all about inspiration and career advice. Each episode, I'll interview an inspirational global changemaker working in sport for development, social impact, or the diplomatic service. This series is perfect if you have interest in breaking into one of these sectors, or you've already landed that dream role and are keen to learn from thought leaders. Enjoy today's episode and stay inspired.
If athletes were given playbooks, not just around the plays they were going to execute during the game, but if they were given playbooks that helped them to think through how they would execute a social justice movement, would we be more successful in ensuring the message was conveyed in a way where people could listen to it, could learn from it, and could follow it?
Welcome, friends. Today we are here with Joanne Pasternak. She is a dynamic and visionary philanthropic impact strategist who over the past two decades has galvanized community engagement with internationally recognized brands, including the very well-known Golden State Warriors and the San Francisco 49ers, as well as ServiceNow, City of Mountain View, and the Special Olympics. As a president and CEO of Oliver Rose and founder of Athletes Voices, Joanne works with professional athletes, entertainers, philanthropists, and executives to amplify impact and inspire change around their areas of passion. So Joanne, that is the meat of what we will talk about today. Of course, we'll bring out other cool things like your academic background, your leadership on NGO boards, and of course, your family and things that are dear to your heart. So thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited to learn more about your background.
I'm excited to be here, Erica. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And Joanne, the name of this podcast is Inspira. So I'm hoping to inspire some people with your story and your advice. And I like to start each conversation with a reason why my guest inspires me. What inspires me about you and what I really admire is that you describe yourself as a matchmaker in a few different areas between the corporate world, nonprofit space, athletes, and problems or problem solving. And I'm just like fascinated by that. And I really appreciate your commitment to using the power of sport to address issues related to inclusion as well as the environment. I feel like those are just two huge topics that don't get enough attention.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Of course.
I don't know that I've ever started a conversation with somebody telling me how I inspire them. So that definitely puts me on the right mindset. And I'm excited to answer any questions you might have about my background.
Oh, good to hear. Good to hear. And I mentioned before we started recording that you are a podcast pro. So I am trying to find things that maybe you haven't talked about. Maybe for starters, for those that are less familiar, share with our audience your entry into the space and maybe more of that angle of the power of sport and when you first realized that sport could have that positive impact on yourself or on others.
You know, it's so interesting. I never imagined that I would end up in the role that I'm in now. When I was 5 years old, I was in a car accident and decided at that point that I wanted to be a pediatrician and specifically an orthopedic specialist. So I wanted to help kids get put back together, like doctors have helped me be put back together. But over time, I started to realize that the place where I was most myself, where I was able to express myself as a leader, to try really hard things and not have people tell me that they were too hard was through sport. So I was a figure skater, still define myself as that, even though I retired, I want to say 30 years ago or something like that, but it's been a few years. But when I was in high school, I had an opportunity to start coaching for the Special Olympics. Mm-hmm. And it was there that I first realized that sports could equalize and could break down walls. And if we go forward a little bit, after law school, I was able to work with Special Olympics at the global headquarters, which was just a dream come true, still very involved with the movement. But soon thereafter, I went to the city of Mountain View, as you mentioned in my bio. And when I was there, I was in a role where I was being asked to work with the city council, the city manager, the police chief, and others on external facing initiatives. But the police chief, Scott Vermeer, asked me to help him launch a police activities league. And that was a transformational moment, because what I saw was that in a community where there was so much disparity between one side of El Camino Real and the other side of El Camino Real, and we had young people who had grown up in environments where they were taught that there was corruption within the law enforcement world and that they should run away from, we were using sports as a bridge to help kids and families start to see them as helpers in most cases. So that's what happened. And somehow throughout that journey, I had my daughter along the way, and I decided I wanted to do that full time. And that's when I jumped over to the San Francisco 49ers, where I had the opportunity to lead their philanthropic efforts for 9 seasons. And then went over to the Golden State Warriors, where I stayed for a couple of back-to-back championship years. Eventually got to the place now where I launched my own firm to do exactly what you said inspires you. And I love hearing that, but it's to figure out how to amplify the voices of athletes and causes and corporate social responsibility, and to do that in concert so that all three parties are not only benefiting, but reaching a really broad audience to help inspire them to move forward with whatever the initiatives are. So in a nutshell, that's my journey.
That's an excellent nutshell. And it's really a continuation, whether you were intentional about each move. I mean, since the age of 5 to now, obviously life happens, but just your ability to connect those experiences and those passions. And as you mentioned, culminating at this time to starting your own firm. And I'm wondering if you can share a little bit more information, or perhaps some definitions, if you will, on what sports philanthropy means, and maybe how it's similar or different to corporate social responsibility, as well as sport for development. Like, those are three huge terms that I know you know a lot about, and just kind of the relationship, and maybe educate us for a moment, if you will.
You know, it's interesting. Sports philanthropy is a form of corporate social responsibility. I would say the biggest difference is that when you're a corporation, and I did run Global Impact for a $10 billion software firm for a period of time. And while we were doing amazing work, it was very much done under different circumstances where people weren't aware of it. And it's not to say that you have to be aware of it for it to be meaningful. In fact, my faith background is Jewish, and I know that Maimonides would say that the most important acts of kindness or philanthropy happen in silence. You don't brag about them, you don't talk about them. The challenge is that if you want others to follow suit, if you want to show that doing business in a way where you're doing great things for the world is also beneficial for business and can help you generate revenue, and revenue generation creates sustainability for the programming that you're doing philanthropically. Within the corporate space, you can be doing the most amazing things, but if nobody is aware of it, then they can't replicate it. They can't learn from it and learn from your success. That's where the athletes come in. So within the space that is sports philanthropy, we're doing great stuff. We're leveraging visibility, making contributions. In the case of both the Warriors and the Niners, I was overseeing the 501c3 independent nonprofit that's affiliated with the teams. So the Golden State Warriors, it was the Warriors Community Foundation. At the 49ers, it was the San Francisco 49ers Foundation. And those were adjacent to the work that we were doing on the corporate side. So you have a sponsor come in. very specific example. We had a partnership at the Niners with the National Dairy Council. Really wonderful organization trying to encourage people to drink milk and to talk about the benefits of calcium. Now, when they partnered with us at the 49ers, we had an event that was specifically focused on female high school athletes and empowering them and arming them with the tools they needed to be successful. The program's called Think Gold. So it was training, health, inspiration, nutrition, and knowledge. Now, the nutrition part was really crucial, particularly when you're working with teenage girls, where you want to be very careful the language that you use and how you express to them what it means to empower and fuel their body versus control their body. And National Dairy Council partnered with us on this initiative because they knew that an essential part of a growing girl's diet was calcium intake through milk, yogurt, cheese, and other dairy products. And so we were able to work with them to bring visibility to an initiative that they had in place, because when you're the 49ers, people pay attention. So that gets rid of this challenge of like, how do we tell people what we're doing if we're a corporation? Well, how you can tell them is by having athletes demonstrate the impact. So at that event, we had Brandi Chastain, we had a number of other female soccer players who were joining us and bringing visibility alongside the San Francisco 49ers players, guys like Joe Staley, Bruce Miller, Anquan Boldin, who are showing up and talking about it. So that's sort of the difference. And sometimes I explain it as, in sports philanthropy, it isn't about the amount of the check, you know, the money that you're donating, but it's about how much you can amplify something. So if you have a large social media following, if you are doing something on a game day where there are millions of people watching, how does that influence or impact momentum around that cause? And in the corporate social responsibility world, it's resource allocation. Are you making this a priority? Are you putting time, effort, and money towards the cause? And are you helping to create something that is a discernible difference in the world as a result? So, two terms.
And sport for development?
You know, it's interesting because I think it becomes a more and more important topic as we see how sport can play a role in leading efforts around sustainability, mm-hmm. around smart growth, development. And again, I'm going to go back to the 49ers again, but when we were building Levi's Stadium, we were looking to build a LEED certified stadium. It was the first outdoor, I want to say gold certified stadium, but I loved telling stories about it because I hope that it would inspire others to look at ways that they could incorporate sustainability and conservation into what their efforts were. So at Levi's Stadium, there's a green roof. The green roof is actually growing vegetables and herbs that are incorporated into the dishes that are served at Levi's Stadium. It's also collecting rainwater. That rainwater is being used to clean the seats and water the turf. And as in doing so, we're creating, oh, we also have solar panels. I mean, there's just everything that you can think of. And it's a fun demonstration of how you can do something in a really big forum, but do it in a way that is creating visibility, but also acknowledgement of the possibility to do something and do it in a way that's good for the environment as well.
Those are incredible, huge examples, like physically massive examples. Yes. So I'm excited to hear you speak about that. And I want to jump in a moment to more of those experiences you had on the league and team side. And maybe mm-hmm. I can ask you before we do, if you can share what your thought process was kind of career and life wise when you were mm-hmm. thinking about working in sports or perhaps thinking of working in social impact. Were the 49ers your dream? Like, were the Golden State Warriors something on your vision board, or how did those kind of come to be or come to fruition?
Oh my gosh, Erica, you know, it's really funny because when I was applying for the job with the 49ers, it was because when I read the job description, every bullet point made my heart beat faster. Like, I was like, this is something I want to do, because I knew that the opportunity to create visibility and momentum was, it was unbelievable. But I knew very little about football. I grew up half in Washington, D.C., half in the San Francisco Bay Area. My dad and his friends all watched the Niners games during the 80s and were big, fans as fans can be. I don't think I had ever attended a professional football game. And I really didn't understand the sport. So because I am half librarian and a bit nerdy, I went to the library and I got books like Idiot's Guide to Football and things like that. I made flashcards and I started to learn the terminology, learn the history. Like
Wow. It's like
I
how you
was going
did
like
law school, probably. Now you're like
totally
prepping.
full on like law school mode, outlining, highlighting stuff. My husband, who comes from a big football family, his grandfather played for University of Southern California and like his dad was the captain of the high school football team. He's looking at me. He's like, "Joe, you cannot learn football from flashcards. Like, watch me." So, the final round of the interview with the Niners, I, was taken on a tour of the office. I come home. I say to my husband, like, "I made a football joke." And he's like, "Oh my God, that's it. You just lost the job." But what I had said was there was like this hallway and the offensive coaches and the defensive coaches. I was like, "Oh, this is like the line of scrimmage, this hallway." And he's like, "You actually got it." So I would say that my dream was to create a career that enabled me to make an impact. One of the reasons why I moved away from medicine, actually, it's because when I started at the University of Pennsylvania, I was a biological basis of behavior major, which is a combination of biology, sociology, psychology, anthropology. It's basically a pre-med major. And I was like all in. That's what I was there to do. Got an internship my first semester at the hospital on campus and was working with kids in the pediatric unit. And I was overwhelmed by the fact that the kids who were coming in West Philadelphia were in need of so much more than having their arms set or strep throat cleared up. Like they had challenges at home that were systemic and it felt like at times irreversible. And that's how I ended up in law school. So I thought, gosh, we have to change policies to make a difference. And then I got to law school, went through that, said, okay, policies are great, but we have to show how it works. And that's what we get to do in sport is we can find the athlete who has the story that feels unbelievable, the 30 for 30 moments, all these things, and say, it's not impossible. It's really hard, but it's not impossible. And here's somebody who can show you a path forward. And I've seen it time and time again that when we're in an environment with a high-profile athlete, and they're sharing with young people that they have a similar life story, or that they see them, they hear them. It makes a difference, and kids listen more. If you have a platform, so I say to athletes all the time, if you have a platform, what are you going to do with it? And how can we acknowledge, whether we like it or not, people look up to athletes as heroes. So if somebody's looking up to you, what are you going to do that they can replicate and that they can feel really good about because they're doing it in a way that you've demonstrated. So the Niners, the Warriors, literally two of the greatest teams in the history of sports, was blessed and honored to be able to work for them. But it was about the opportunity and the work, which is probably also why I was able to step away as the Warriors were, in this amazing dynasty. I knew that for me, I needed to do something different. And to take what I had learned and leverage that to more directly work with athletes around their social impact strategies.
Quick break here to highlight what I consider to be a fabulous resource that I've created for any listeners out there interested in learning more about the sport for development and peace sector. You've come to the right place. In addition to Inspira podcast episodes that you can listen to, I've created a written resource that you can read, which currently has over 90 items I've curated from my own experience and vetted with other experts in the field. These include databases to find award-winning organizations,
links to reports, books, and research, as well as recommended newsletters and recorded webinars, all Sport for Dev related. I encourage you to have a look. You can find this resource by visiting my link tree listed in each episode's show notes, then clicking Erica's Global Resource Hub. That's right, Erica's Global Resource Hub. If you like what you read and what you hear, I'd love it if you could give Inspira a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and write a kind review. That would be so energizing for me, and it would help Inspira reach more ears. Thanks, and back to the show.
3, 2, 1, yeah. Out of curiosity, did you know anyone on the inside when you applied?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you hear about the old boys network or whatever. I randomly, honestly, my husband was working with a company that provided online storefronts for professional photographers at the time. And one of his clients was a team photographer for the 49ers. I had never met this gentleman. So I said to my husband, like, you know, don't you work with a team photographer? He said, yeah, Terrell Lloyd, he's great. And I said, can you connect us? Honestly, Terrell and I met for lunch at like BJ's or something 2 days later, and we hit it off. And I just talked to him 2 days ago. Like, T is still one of my favorite humans in the universe. Mm-hmm. And what became so incredible in getting to know Terrell was that over lunch, we saw how we were similarly aligned. And he did take my resume to the hiring manager and said, hey, you should take a look, which got me a 15-minute interview. But I was way overprepared for that 15-minute interview. And that worked well because it went into a 45-minute interview, which then took me on and on and on. My father, gosh, he would have turned 75 today, actually. I passed away a couple years ago, but he used to say, look, I can open a door for you, but you have to walk in. And when you walk in, you have to show up. Mm-hmm. And you have to show up bigger and better than other people when somebody has opened a door for you, because more is expected of you. And I took that to heart.
Wow. Well, kudos to T for bringing your resume to the front. And I just kind of want to highlight what you shared about that story. You didn't just ask your husband to connect you and then ask for a favor of somebody who you just met. Like, you went to lunch, you got to know each other, mm-hmm. developed this professional relationship. Obviously, this can happen very quickly in the span of days. Yeah. And then leveraging that relationship and figuring out how can each of you provide value, and you've mm-hmm. certainly stayed in touch. So it's just this larger topic and larger theme in both of our careers around how professional relationships can really provide value to one another. So I really appreciate that story you shared.
Well, Erica, it's interesting because when the first time we spoke, you shared a story with me about how you had stayed in touch with people and then reached back. And I tell like young people, like college students, others all the time, if somebody hands you their card or gives you their contact information, they are giving it to you because they want you to reach out, but it's up to you to continue to give them updates and to reach out, not just when you want something, but also mm-hmm. just, I mean, when you think of them. And when you work in a high profile world of sports, people want stuff from you all the time. And if you're reaching out to me and you're like, hey, I'd really love for you to hook me up with tickets to a game, like, why?
And so storytelling, the why, the how, that has been another theme of your journey. And I'm wondering if we can zoom in on your experience leading philanthropic efforts for 12 seasons with professional sports franchises. I know you served as a vice president of philanthropy and executive director of the charitable foundations for the Golden State Warriors and San Francisco 49ers. What did that look like on a day-to-day role and a week-to-week role? What does that mean?
It's cuckoo. so I think to contextualize a little bit, when I started the Niners, my daughter was like 7 months old, and my son was born a year and a half later. So I was working this job that is not 9 to 5. I would laugh when I would hear people say things about Thanksgiving break or whatever, because what do people do after they eat their turkey?
Watch
They watch
football.
football. So who's there?
Joanne.
Yes. And you know, it's funny because my role is like, I'm out there doing a community activation. Like it was always in football world, it was like youth football play 60 days. So we'd have a scrimmage at halftime with little kids and we'd give a donation and we do all these things. And I remember one year we're playing on Thanksgiving and my husband and kids were at Thanksgiving with my family, like my parents, and I'm at the game. And they're texting me some pictures. And then the Niners lost that game and we lost badly. And it was like this really depressing kind of day where the weather was bad. And one of the guys in the opposing team was on our 50-yard line on TV, live broadcast, eating a turkey leg and being like, ha, look at what we did to the Niners. And I just remember feeling like, this kind of is crappy. Like, what am I doing? And but the thing is that I also could then turn back around and be like, these kids just had a once in a lifetime opportunity. Now, when I was working for the Warriors, we played on Christmas. And one year, I mean, this is where I would incorporate my family into it. One year, we were doing an event where we were presenting foster youth with Surface tablets, and the players were going to hand them sort of pre-tip off to the kids. And I really wanted to be with my kids that day. And so it was like a, I think it was a noon tip off, but my kids were little and they agreed because they would never do this now. They agreed to dress as elves and they actually got to be on the court helping to hand these packages off to the players so that the players could then present them to the kids. And the interesting thing was, I think my daughter was like 9 or something, 8 or 9, but she got it. She got why she was there. She got what she was doing and got to see me in action. And now that she is 14, actually she'll be 15 this week. Now that she's 14, I feel like so much of that is embedded in her vision of what she can be when she grows up. And you know, Erica, I shared this with you, but she kind of wants to be you or you know, your husband when she grows up because she loves foreign service, she loves international relations, but she honestly believes that anything's possible for her because I dragged her along to so many work events. And she became a part of it. So the work is crazy. The hours are not normal. If you're looking for any sort of work-life balance, it will not exist if you're working in a front office of sports. Tip off is tip off, kickoff is kickoff. If you're not ready, the game's still starting, and you need to be really on top of your game to pivot if necessary, if things aren't going as planned, because you can't just say, hey, sorry, time out. I'm not ready for that check presentation. So can we wait 5 minutes while the bus with the kids comes into the stadium? Like, no. Instead, it's okay, we have a pre-recorded announcement that talks about Bay Area youth. Look to my left, look to my right. Where are Bay Area youth that I can incorporate into this or who I can incorporate into this moment? Because I need to figure it out now. The shirts don't arrive. If the player you had a whole event focused around gets injured the day before and is in treatment and can't be at the event, like figure it out. And that skill is irreplaceable. You can't, I don't know if you can get it anywhere else.
In thinking about the role of athletes, thinking about how athletes can educate or empower or advocate around social justice, around social impact, around advocacy, all these really big terms that sometimes people shy away from, corporations shy away from. I'm wondering how that looked in those 12 seasons, or fast forwarding to now. I know you've done that a ton. Do you have any examples that highlight how athletes can really use their platform to educate and inspire around social justice or social impact?
Well, I was on the front lines for 49ers with Eric Reid, Eli Harrell, Colin Kaepernick, and the movement that began as a statement around police brutality and racial profiling and inequities. And then was at the Golden State Warriors as we were uninvited from the White House and came up with an alternative plan that turned out to be incredible. I watched different leaders, both on the field or court and in the front office, navigate those moments. But what I appreciate the most is the bravery that needs to be harnessed in order to speak up in a moment when people may not want to hear what you have to say. You have a book behind you, Strong Women, Better World. And I mean, I think about this all the time, you know, well-behaved women rarely change history or make history or whatever the statement is. But it's interesting because the example that I think is most incredible within the moment and the world that we're in right now is when we had athletes stepping up to say, I understand why I need to get this COVID vaccine, and I'm doing it because I care about those around me. And prior to that, when athletes were standing up and saying, we need to vote, or right in the middle of all that, we need to vote. And I work with a couple of guys who, and some women, who were actively engaged in getting people not just registered, but helping them get to the polls so that it could use their voice. And it's like those micro moments sometimes that can make the biggest difference. But absolutely, no question about it, I feel like influencers, athletes, entertainers, and others made a huge difference in the 2020 election. And as a result, more voices of more people were heard because they made it cool to vote and they made it real to have your voice heard. And so from that perspective, I look back to this like many, you know, 30 years ago, and I was a freshman at the University of Pennsylvania and working in a hospital, and thinking to myself, like, what is it that I'm doing here in this hospital? And what is it that I really am looking to do? And while for some people, their greatest gift is the ability to heal others, for me, my greatest gift is the ability to help others find their voice and to go use it. And that's what we're doing every day within this world of like leveraging the athlete engagement to create momentum and visibility around social justice and social impact.
You've also, throughout our conversation, mentioned why it was challenging to work in the CSR branch or just any branch of a professional sports team and sports league. And I imagine starting to have these thoughts enter your mind of what if I did something different? What if I started something of my own? And of course, you mentioned the timing would be really important. I'd love to know more about that arrival at the yes, I'm going to leave what I have and I'm going to start Oliver Rose, Athletes Voices. I know there's a fun story in there about being at the Vatican at the time the Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, kind of all of these things culminating probably for at least 10 years to arrive at that moment. Talk to me about what that was like and the things going through your head when you were making that decision.
When I was, and you alluded to this event that I did years ago, which is Sport at the Service for Humanity, where a group of about 200, 250 of us were invited to the Vatican in Rome to meet with the Pope and to talk to each other and to leaders within the faith community about how sports can be leveraged to create momentum around social impact and change.
Just
and,
wow, Joanne. Wow.
I know. Not I
even,
know, I know.
Not even you had to do anything there, but just wow.
it was pretty surreal. I'm not going to lie. I was on the plane going to Rome. I had left. We had the 49ers breast cancer awareness game. I left at halftime to get on a plane. It happened to correspond with the start of Yom Kippur. So I was like, well, I'm going to fast and then go see the Pope. Like, this is crazy. And there were these moments where I was like, what is even happening? But while I was there, that was in the middle of the season when we were navigating how people were responding to Colin and Eric and Eli and the movement that they had started and the momentum that was growing around it. And over a glass of wine one night, somebody asked me, what's it really like? And I found myself saying out loud for the first time, I wish we had had time to take a deep breath and think about what the message would be so that it wouldn't be misconstrued. And if athletes were given playbooks, not just around the plays they were going to execute during the game, but if they were given playbooks that helped them to think through how they would execute a social justice movement, would we be more successful in ensuring the message was conveyed in a way where people could listen to it, could learn from it, and could follow it? And that was the impetus for beginning Athletes Voices. It started with the Weatherhead Center for International Studies at Harvard University and was a result of that conversation. The first members of our advisory board were people who were there in Rome. And now it's grown to include three different advisory boards, an academic, an athlete, and a corporate leader board. We have a student fellows program, which is for undergraduate and graduate students looking to immerse themselves in this world and support the athletes who are looking to elevate their voices. We've partnered up with not just Harvard, but have expanded to now partner with the Doug Williams Center and historically Black colleges and universities with intercollegiate athletics, as well as all the top universities that have sports for development programs, and finished up season two of our webinars. We had an in-person convening in April and November of last year, and we're doing another one in November of this year in Atlanta at the Center for Civil and Human Rights. And it's beyond what I could have imagined. But when I decided to take this leap, it's kind of like when I got to college and I thought I'd be a doctor. I thought I was going to do something different, but this has become my ikigai. This is the thing that makes me want to jump out of bed in the morning and get to work. I have this like right next to me because I remember the story of John Carlos, Tommy Smith, and of course, Peter, the guy in second place, who was from Australia, and you're Norman. And he, when he returned to Australia after not supporting, but not supporting, I mean, he was stood with them in solidarity. He wore a button that said that he understood what they were going through, and he was ostracized. And he was stripped of his medal, and he suffered a lot, as a result of standing with people whose cause wasn't his own, but with whom he felt he should show his support and solidarity. And I think about that all the time because a quote that's been attributed to Peter is, what would you do? Would you still do it if you were looking at something that might make it so that you lost everything? And you think about the Nike ad, and it's, you know, that Colin Kaepernick did a few years ago. It's like, you're gonna stand for something.
And Joanne, I know your work now is really centered on using philanthropy as a bridge to athletes' careers after sports. And mm-hmm. I also understand that you focus a lot on the finding out the why for the athletes, figuring out kind of what they're passionate about so that you're doing a matchmaking in terms of their passion about this issue. Let's use this platform. And my final comment before the question is that I also understand you sometimes advise athletes not to start their own entity, right? Not to build a 501c3. So thinking about all of those things that you do at Oliver mm-hmm. Rose, advising athletes, using philanthropy, figuring out their why, talk to me about what that looks like and how you've kind of identified your sweet spot in this to offer this to people.
Yeah, it's interesting because there is so much to helping somebody figure out how to say yes and no with purpose and with confidence. One of the elements, and I alluded to this earlier, was athletes are asked stuff all the time. Can you sign this? Can you do this? Can you show up at this event? Meanwhile, if they're active in their careers, they're focusing on how to succeed in their sport. The more they succeed, the more visibility they will have down the line for those causes that are most important to them. But deep down, what we do is we try to help them figure out which cause, singular, is most important to them and how they can become a advocate for that specific cause. Because if you're trying to do 100 different things, it's really hard to have aggregated impact. I really encourage athletes to figure it out. Then where the matchmaking comes in is, let's say that your cause of choice is juvenile diabetes, because you have a younger sibling who is diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and you saw what they went through, and you understand that there is a lack of healthcare access within the community where you were raised. And so let's dig into them. What can you as a high-profile athlete do to increase visibility around the lack of healthcare resources. So rather than going out and starting your own 501c3, joining up with a fiscal partnership, something like the Giving Back Fund, where you can start a fund and leverage their expertise to do the good work, takes a lot of pressure off of the shoulders of the athlete who is very likely under experienced in that area. But it also is important for the athlete to find that nonprofit that's doing the great work already. We do not need more nonprofits, period. We just don't. There are a lot of nonprofits out there. They are doing great work. There are many who are also not doing great work. And from an efficiency and reduction of an administrative overhead perspective, if I could change one thing, it would be to have administrative overhead costs covered so that all the organizations doing work in a similar space could collaborate, figure out who knew the best approach in a particular community or on a particular subtopic, and then for them to come together and to work towards solutions in concert with each other. So that's part of this with the athletes, is we're helping them to identify which nonprofit might benefit in the greatest way from their background and their unique experiences. And then laying on top of that would be a corporate entity that has funds, but not the visibility. So we go back to this National Dairy Council example, where they might have the funds to allocate towards it. And then in their case, they also had a lot of expertise, but we worked with the Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative and Positive Coaching Alliance, two organizations that absolutely understand female athletes, female athlete mindset, to help us to build up that expertise. And then we brought the right athletes in. I mentioned Brandi Chastain as one of them. We brought the right athletes in to advocate around a topic that was part of their lives, that made sense. Brandi absolutely knows what it's like to be marginalized because you're a female athlete and you're trying to pursue your personal best. And that's where the magic happens, is when you have all of that together. So that's what we do at Oliver Rose. At Athletes Voices, we are leveraging those moments to be able to showcase the power of athletes' voices and athletes using their voices. Our mission there is, you know, we say when athletes use their voices, the impact is exponential, because we truly believe that. If you think about, I hold up that picture, mm-hmm. and neither you nor I were alive when that moment happened, but we still know that it happened. And we know that it was a momentous occasion, but we forget about the challenges that those three gentlemen faced following that, and instead focus on where they are today. And so part of Athletes Voices is to say, like, this isn't easy, but still possible. So let's work together and do it. And in the room with Athletes Voices, you'll meet athletes from all different causes, all different backgrounds. You'll find an athlete who's a Paralympic wheelchair tennis player, having a conversation with an NFL superstar, and they are speaking the same language at that moment because they are both committed to bringing awareness to a topic.
What would you say to critics who maybe don't realize the potential power, the potential positive influence that an athlete can have, especially long term, right? There's some valid critiques out there that may say, okay, this is a publicity stunt or this one day activation, this one time thing, et cetera, won't last. What would you say to those critics?
You know, there's another famous quote that talks about, like, when you make a difference in one life, you make a difference in all lives, you know? And I think about that sometimes. If you can get somebody to listen, if you can get somebody to learn, you're making a difference there. And that's where the exponential, like, sort of ripple effect that comes in. Critics are underestimating the intellectual capacity, the articulation skills, the drive, the determination, everything that you have to be an elite athlete. Period. I mean, you don't just show up and you're a superstar. I say this to my 12-year-old son who loves sports and is, you know, a talented athlete, but at times he would want to rely on his natural ability. And I'd say, well, you know, what happens to natural ability is it gets surpassed by those who work really hard. The people who are the superstars are the ones with the natural ability who also work hard. So if you take that mindset and you translate it into a place of social responsibility or bringing awareness to topics, then the potential is tremendous. It's also the reason why I recommend that athletes find a topic instead of all the topics. And when they can refer to something that happened to them or their family and reflect back on why, it's much harder to dismiss it as just a publicity stunt. It's interesting. You're wearing this beautiful blush pink blouse, and it makes me think of the breast cancer awareness campaigns that we did and some of the negativity surrounding that. Like, oh, it's just to sell stuff. It's a merchandising play. And I hear them and I understand that, but I also have met people whose lives were saved because they saw a pink moment. It reminded them to go schedule their mammogram or to investigate what something they found when doing a self-exam. And they discovered they had breast cancer, but they caught it in the early stages. And like, you can say what you want about the Go Pink, but it absolutely saved lives. So when you have the world stage, what are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. That's it. Bottom line. And athletes have the world stage. So that's why we try to leverage it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm on your team. You didn't have to convince me, but if you no. did, you did. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
And I know, Joanne, that ton of your work has poured into issues around the environment and sustainability and issues around the exclusion of people with disabilities. Can you talk about why those two missions in particular are close to your heart and that you feel they're quite important, especially to leverage the power of sport?
It goes back to voices. There are voices that are marginalized or are unheard. You know, unfortunately, the earth can't speak for itself and cry out and say, I'm in pain.
It's trying to. It's trying
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I mean, oh my goodness. And as somebody who gets new freckles and sunburn knows if I even think about being in the sun, I remember as a teenager being in Australia and getting the worst sunburn I've ever had in my life because of the impact that greenhouse gases had had on the ozone layer above Australia. And it was just this moment where I was like, oh my gosh, this is a real thing. And we have to do something. My father was a very, very early leader in the environmental movement on the government side, working with folks around resources and how to really help to create sustainability. But again, the earth doesn't have a voice. But we do, and we can talk about it. When we look at individuals with different abilities, one of the elements is that there's an underestimation often, most of the time, if not always, irresponsibly placed around somebody based off of the fact that they have a physical or intellectual difference, and yet their voices can be heard in a powerful way and can have an even greater influence than somebody who has all the advanced degrees and won an international debate championship. I think of one of my really good friends, Jen Southall, who's participated in the USA Deaflympic ice hockey program. And Jen speaks and uses her voice via American Sign Language. And I hear her clearly, like, absolutely clear. I do not speak ASL. I know finger spelling and that's about it. But when we take the time to like find our common language, that's when we start to move together. But those two causes, it's both related. Both of them are related to like, why are you underestimating something or why aren't you listening hard enough? So that's really what it's about.
Thank you.
Now that we know more about our guest's career journey, the rest of our conversation will allow us to have some fun and get to know our guest on a personal level through some rapid-fire questions. We'll then start to wrap up with pointed questions focused on advice and how our listeners can transform interest into action. Enjoy the rest of the conversation.
All right, Joanne, what makes a great figure skater?
Ooh, wow, persistence and the ability to get back up after you fall on your rear end onto a cold, hard, wet surface and to do it with a smile. So I think of the Chumbawamba song all the time, Tumping or whatever it was called. It was like you get knocked down, but you get up again. It's basically written about a figure skater. So not really, but it should be.
Do you have a favorite travel story?
Oh gosh, we can't even go there. No, but I I love travel. I've traveled. My kids have traveled. Like South Africa probably. And I went with Eric Reed and his family, brought my kids along, and we were able to do soccer workshops with Ubuntu Football Academy, with boys from the Mosipamili Township. And the reason why it was so amazing was, first of all, South Africa. Second of all, soccer. But my kids were there, and they were young, and I saw them. Goes back to the not seeing the differences. Mm-hmm. My son was like 8 and loved soccer and has a soccer ball, and he jumps out onto the field and is playing soccer with a bunch of boys who are around his age. And they were laughing and they were making up, you know, different rules. And when he got off the field, he was like, oh, we all just love soccer. Like, these are my new friends. And that to me is like just a great reminder that we could be continents apart and just throw out that soccer ball and off you go. So that's a great travel memory for me.
What words would you use to describe your dog, Wesley the Bernedoodle? Sleeping right now. Well done, sleeping. Wesley.
You know, Wesley's like a puffball of love, but he's comforting and he's needy and he wants everybody to be his friend. And so it's so funny. I took him to a dog park recently and a couple of dogs are being kind of aggressive. And I swear he looks up at me, like he looks at me sideways. He's like, Mommy, why are they doing that? Like, don't they just want to be friends? So yeah, I'd say Wesley's kind of like that peacemaker, you know, who just doesn't understand why people would be mean to each other. So, and by the way, most of my athletes I work with, they love Wesley.
Thinking about advice, I know you've given some great advice so far. I'm wondering what educational programs are you aware of that you might recommend for folks who are interested in working in sport for social change?
Well, I'm totally biased because I happen to be affiliated with a few. I'm an adjunct. I teach a class called Corporate Social Responsibility in Sports.
And that's at Georgetown, right?
At Georgetown, but I've also at University of San Francisco, Georgetown, and then also the Sports and Entertainment Industry Certificate Program, which is awesome. And I think it's a lesser commitment in terms of time and also funds. Mm-hmm. So if people are looking for an entree into the world of sports for social impact, I highly recommend checking out SEIC because you will find a cohort of people who are like-minded. It is very affordable, ample scholarships available, and it will only take, you know, about an hour a week for you to navigate it and come out of it with a clear purpose. The Georgetown program, the USF program, those are master's degree programs, definitely more of a commitment. But I actually think through leadership and volunteerism and philanthropic programs, like go to your local Boys and Girls Club, YMCA, whatever the organization is that's in your neighborhood that could use an extra set of hands, and just go and see what it's like to be on the ground managing programs for kids in need and how sports can make a difference. And that's the education that you'll really need.
Awesome. Are there any other resources or sport for development or sports philanthropy organizations that you want to shout out to or that you hope folks look up after this conversation? Any more resources?
So I am always looking for new talent to join our Athletes Voices Student Fellows program. So if you are an undergraduate or graduate student and you're interested in becoming a part of our next cohort, please visit athletesvoices.org and click on join us. And there you can find the application and the overview. And we want students from all different backgrounds, all different schools. And you don't have to have sports experience. We really just want somebody who has a passion for social impact and change. I've mentioned a few organizations during this conversation, the Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative, Positive Coaching Alliance, Special Olympics, figure skating in Harlem is another one. I'm really committed to Angel City Sports. I mean, wherever you are, there is somebody doing something awesome, and go find them and support them in their efforts versus trying to do your own thing.
Is there anything else you want the audience to know about in terms of supporting you or your work moving forward?
You know, follow social media, amplify messages about athletes doing great things in the world. If you hear negativity around athlete engagement, remind them of all the good that has come up from that. And if you're looking for more examples and more stories, go back to athletesvoices.org. Follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on all the platforms. We're at Athletes Voices. On Facebook and on LinkedIn. We're at Athletes Vox, V-O-X, on Twitter and Instagram.
And Joanne, my final question that I'm excited to ask all of my guests, who inspires you?
My dad inspired me. I mean, he believed in me. He was proud of me. And he didn't expect anything in return. And I think that's an example for all of us. It's do good things without expecting something back. Do it because it's the right thing to do. So my dad went through so many different things, never complained about it. He passed away in January of 2021 as a result of younger onset Alzheimer's, way too young. Today would have been his 75th birthday.
Wow.
And it just, you know, you just, I reflect back on all that he could have done had he had the time to do it. So he inspires me.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that and for thinking of him today on his birthday. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Inspira podcast with Erica Mueller Chen. I really hope you enjoyed the episode and found it useful. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. Specifically, my link tree is there with tons of awesome information. Feel inspired to take action today? I've got 3 action steps you can take right now because you know your girl likes calls to action and the number 3. So here goes. Number 1. Follow the podcast on your chosen podcast platform. Number 2, share your feedback with me through the listener survey listed on that link tree. And number 3, tell just one friend about this podcast so they can give it a listen too. And do I have any overachievers out there? I've got a bonus action step, which is to consider supporting me and making sure this passion project prospers. So number 4, follow the link to buy me a coffee. That would be pretty amazing. Until next time, stay inspired.